Cactus Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
Good evening and welcome to Vectus Movies. That's right, your weekly one-stop shop of what is good on the cinema, what is bad, what you should avoid, what you should get up and go to it. You know, you see, I find a lot of people who tell me things along the lines of, oh, well, you know, it's been ages since I last saw a film, and we're here to tell you why you should get up and go watch a film and break a habit of probably a decade or something like that. There seems to be a lot of people on the island like that. So with me today in the studio, as usual, are my fellow cinematic treasure hunters, Sharon.
Hello.
And Sean.
Hiya.
And Sean, it's a really momentous day today, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It is a momentous day because today we celebrate the anniversary of you coming into the world.
I do indeed. It is my birthday. I've tried to keep it.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shawnee. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate that. As I say, I've tried to keep it low key, but it's been a really, really nice day. I've had plenty of cakes and things and best wishes and, you know, from a lot of the important people. But that was the first happy birthday today. Thank you so much.
Oh, don't worry. We are glad to be the first at something. To be the first at something. Oh, so happy with that. Right. Okay. Thank you so much to Paddy, who had the show before us. And as Paddy said, if you wanted to get in touch with us and you wanted to say, all right, oh yeah, I saw this film recently. What do you guys think about it? If you wanted to have your say on a film that we are going to talk about today, and if you think we're totally wrong, we're totally right, whatever it is, we would love you to get in touch. Either by emailing studio@vectusradio.fm or by calling us on 240-666. And also, you can get in touch with us on Facebook. So just go to the Vectus Radio Facebook page and type in whatever it is you want to say, and it will just be great to hear from you and great to hear what you think about the movies we're talking about and what you think about your movies as well. Well, what movies you've seen as well recently. So this week, we finally have some films.
We do have some films.
Yes,
we have,
yes. More than one. We have to dissect in minute detail.
I know. So, if you listened to this show 2 weeks ago, we had Avengers Infinity War come out, which is still doing great guns everywhere, playing gangbusters all around the place, and everybody has just been legging it. The week after that film was released, no new films were released. People were like, no, let them have the cinemas. It is theirs for this week.
It's just not worth it.
It's not worth it. Not worth it. Last week, we had two films that stuck their head up, and this week, we have four films to talk about.
Oh,
four
yeah.
Films.
Count them, people.
Yeah, we've actually, within us, so we're going to talk tonight. We're going to talk Deadpool 2.
Indeed.
We're going to talk, Entebbe?
Entebbe.
We're going to talk Sherlock Gnomes. Mm-hmm. And we are going to talk,
Breaking In.
Breaking In. Yeah. Breaking In. So, let's kick off with what is going to be the big movie. Is the big movie is Deadpool 2. And now, Deadpool 2 is, okay, it's another superhero movie that's come out, and it's, I think the knowing them, I think they've been a bit cheeky coming out like 2 weeks after Infinity War, because that's very, very Deadpool. And it also has, it's the second film that I think is going to do really, really well this year, released within 2 weeks of each other, starring Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin, that guy's just doing well right now. The guy, he's doing very well, and I have no problem with that because I think Josh Brolin is awesome.
I do, and he's awesome in this too, yeah, actually. Yeah, yeah. And I think in the trailer, but in the movie, in the trailers a bit, he goes, pump the hate breaks, Thanos. Because, of course, Josh Brolin played Thanos in Infinity War.
So Deadpool. Now, this is the sequel to the smash hit from 2 years ago. And Deadpool had a very torturous route to the screen, in that it's a character that has been loved by people for ages. He's a character who is very, very self-aware, in that he's quite a post-water character, because in the comic books originally, when you read about him, he knew he was in a comic book. So he would very often comment on the things about that are going on around him, and comment on the other heroes, and comment about the writers who are writing what he's writing right now. And so he's very sort of meta in that way. And in the film, when they brought the film out, they did a similar thing with that. And originally, the character of Wade Wilson showed up in Wolverine Origins, or X-Men Origins Wolverine. And generally speaking, what they did with that character in that film is hated. Is hated. I think with good reason, because that was a bit where you just... It was a time when it felt like the studio was meddling and the studio did not know what they had. So they made a short little sort of clip of Deadpool, which with Ryan Reynolds, because Reynolds had wanted to play that character his whole life. He finally gets the chance to play him in this film. And then he's like, what? He shows up on set and he's like, what are you doing? No, this isn't right. But obviously he's under contract, so he has to play the role. They make this little short snippet to say, this is what we think a Deadpool movie could actually be like, which gets leaked in inverted commas. But it takes years. It probably takes about 8 years before they finally greenlight this film and they get to make Deadpool. And they don't put that much money into it because they think, there's going to be a small population, a small group of these people who are going to actually want to watch this film. Deadpool came out without that big a budget, which is something that they made fun of even in Deadpool. It kept talking about how little money they had to make the film. And it broke all records. And you can tell people weren't really watching this film because it was R-rated, it was bloody, it was sweary. It's probably the most sweary superhero movie ever made. And it goes R-rated, it breaks all these records. And people are like, oh, wow. And all of a sudden the studio's like, oh my God, we might have something here. We should make another one. So this is the second one that's come out. And so it's Ryan Reynolds coming back as Wade Wilson / Deadpool. And I think Ryan Reynolds might have found what he was put on this earth for.
Yeah.
I honestly think that. I mean, sure, what do you think?
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. And I think there's even one of the post-credit scenes in there, which I just love. I think that's great. You know, the one at the typewriter, is just, you know, the one I'm talking about. I think that's like, I was like, that is just so... Ryan Reynolds is just so good.
Yeah, that had me in stitches.
It did me too. Yeah, because his expressions and all that.
With the first Deadpool, I maintain that as far as if you're watching a Deadpool movie, you're not really going there for the story, because I think the first Deadpool movie I thought was a very straightforward superhero origin story.
Yeah.
What made it different was in the telling, is the way in which they told it. Yeah. And because you have Deadpool, and once you have Deadpool, he's like this sort of wild card that you throw in there. And the character and the way Ryan Reynolds plays him and all of his asides and everything is what makes it go along. So in this film, I feel like in Deadpool 2 is a similar thing. If I stop to think about the story for a second, I think I'll be like, whoa, wait a second. How about that? Oh, no. But it's the fact that you're having too much fun.
I think that's it. I mean, I can't really find, you know me normally, what I'm like with the plot holes and all that. There's probably thousands in this and I didn't even... see them, you know, because I was enjoying the movie.
Yeah, exactly. You're having too much fun watching this film to sit there and go, hang on a second. Oh, come on. How can you do that? Because there's things in the film where Deadpool actually looks at the camera and goes, well, that's just lazy writing.
That's
great, isn't it? These films are almost kind of like a satire on superhero movies. So... to be a satire in superhero movies, it kind of says that the things you expect to happen in a comic book movie are going to happen, but Deadpool is going to point out that that's rubbish, that's a bit stupid. But anyway, we're going to carry on.
We're going to go with it.
We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, and so I feel like I think it's in the telling of the story, and these people are great storytellers, and Ryan Reynolds is just brilliant. He just has such an affinity for the character that it just seems like
it is his alter ego, isn't it?
Pretty much. It gets very hard to say where Ryan Reynolds ends and Deadpool starts. Like, you're not sure which one of them it is. So is it Ryan Reynolds who's looking at the camera and saying something, or is that Deadpool?
Yeah.
Like, there's a bit where they go. They go, yes, they keep that in the basement, right beside a massive amount of foreshadowing. I'll go, wait a second.
It's not me.
Is that
the phone ringing?
Is that the phone someone calling in for?
My phone.
No. Sorry about that. We thought we might have had a caller calling.
Yeah, we were hoping for a caller there.
I don't put my phone on silent.
We thought we might have a caller who was calling up to tell us that, tell us what they thought about Deadpool 2, but no, it's just Sharon's phone going off.
I have to agree. Toes, this movie was It was great. And Josh Brolin as well.
Oh, yeah.
As Cable.
Josh Brolin shows up as Cable, yeah.
Yeah, he was great as well. I mean, in fact, all the characters were good, really.
I think they did really well.
Yeah, really, really good casting.
Really well with the characters. I mean, there are some cameos in this film. There are some cameos in this film that they kept really, really quiet. And an absolute genius. The cameos in this film are
We cannot say who the cameos are.
But there's at least one cameo that makes me want to go back and watch the film and freeze frame it.
I think, funny enough, I bumped into it.
I'm aware of one cameo.
You couldn't help yourself, Sean.
Honestly, it is genius.
I don't think, talking to people, they would know who it was anyway, or wouldn't have noticed the cameo. No idea.
I think if anybody, because Deadpool is kind of set within the X, he's kind of X-Men adjacent.
Yeah.
So in the first film, you had bits of where he goes to the X-Mansion, and he sees Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and he's like, huh, this really, really big house, and there's only the two of you. It's almost, and he looks at the camera and goes, it's almost as if the studio wouldn't give us enough money to hire any more X-Men. And so in this one, there's a bit where he goes back to the X-Mansion and he's going, why is it this big house and there's only ever the two of you in here? Oh, come on, I thought we did well the last time. I thought they would at least have given us some money to get some more people. And it's just the way in which it's done. It's just so... There's sometimes when you feel as if people are stretching for something, especially comedy. I think comedy in sort of superhero movies or comedy in action movies, there's times when you feel like people are stretching for it and they're trying to make something funny, when this just feels as if they're just coasting along and it's just what happens, because they just know what they have, and they have such an affinity for the character, and they have such a... And everybody who comes in, I mean, Julian Dennison, who I love because he plays Ricky Baker in The Hunt for the Wilder People, which, if you haven't seen The Hunt for the Wilder People... Go watch that film. Go, awesome, awesome film. And so he comes in and he plays him, and it's the fact that they're commenting on the, because he in The Hunt for the Wilder People, a lot is made about the fact that Julian Dennison is quite big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's quite heavy set young man, and he's talking about, because he's a mutant, and he's talking about the fact that I wanted to be a superhero, and Deadpool was like, come on, you still can. He's like, what are you talking about? When have you ever seen a plus size superhero? And he's like, and Ruben's like, oh, good point. And it's like, it's things like that they just keep throughout the film, and it just kind of works together and all that. And you have Zazie Beetz, who shows up at Domino, and there's all these funny things that they do, because Zazie Beetz is black. She's black, and she plays Domino, who in the character is actually white, like not Caucasian, but white. It's pretty much like bleached white, and has like a black patch over her left eye. And here you have Zazie Beetz, who's playing Domino, but she has a white patch over her left eye. And I'm thinking, that's kind of clever. And it's but she walks up, and she's her superpower is that she's lucky. And there's this whole thing talking about where Deadpool's going, oh, that really isn't very cinematic. Come on, that's not a superpower. And he's talking about, as all this stuff is going on around her, that's showing how her power works. And it's just really, really well done. You have, oh my God.
Sharon, did you see the first Deadpool movie?
Yes, I did.
You did, yeah? And did you enjoy it?
I did. It hit the inner winceometer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
A few times.
You might enjoy
it. It went into the red, but it was enjoyable. Yes, I did enjoy it. But you know, that sort of my winceometer is quite sensitive to some films with its bit swearing, a bit violent. But I think I enjoyed it. Yes, even though I did sort of go, oh, too much.
I actually don't think this one's as bad as the first
one. Don't think it is. Not for, that's the point I was jumping to. There's quite language.
I definitely don't think...
There's not so much of the, you know, the gratuitous language as in the first one.
Yeah, I'm thinking about...
am going to see it.
Oh, good.
I shall have, you know, I shall, you know, prepare myself to be mildly offended, I expect.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
But sometimes that's not a bad thing.
So I'll tell you what, the attitude, what hasn't changed is the attitude towards the random ending of lives.
Yeah.
they make no bones about the fact that these are superheroes who are just killing people left, right?
Yeah.
Who are just like totally killing them.
You're going to die.
And even and they even have this, like, you know, the taxi driver character, Dapinda.
Yeah.
Dapinda. Yep. So even the way he's treated in the film, they even refer, they reference the fact that, yeah, this might not be that, this might be a bit of a crude stereotype, shall we say. I just feel like it's a film that I think it's hard to not like this film.
Yeah.
Because there's so much charisma coming off the screen. Ryan Reynolds carries the thing. This is a film that stumbles headlong into cliches. It knows. It tells you, we're going to go there. It goes there and it goes, you see, we went there. But, you know, we have to do that because, we don't have a movie. So I feel like the storyline in the Deadpool movie is never going to break any barriers. It's not like, even if you look at something like Avengers Infinity War, in which you look at the storyline, you think the way they're putting the story together, and you're looking at the motivations of characters, and you think, oh my word, this is amazing. Deadpool doesn't do that.
No,
Deadpool, it's all about...
It's a punch in the face, isn't it?
The whole film is like one massive punchline.
Yeah.
The film is like one massive punchline. And it's... So even the fact where he goes, oh no, I'm going to save the kid, and the way he goes about it and everything, and the fact that this is a film that has a James Bond-style title sequence, but it's a Deadpool James Bond-style title sequence. And I think the action sequences are well shot because it's directed by one of the guys who directed John Wick. And so there's not...
Quite a good pedigree, then.
Yeah, quite a good pedigree. It's quite a good pedigree. So I would give this a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, it's got to be a 4 out of 5.
It's got to be a 4 out of 5.
I loved it. I thought it was a really, really enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
And as I say, in the post-credit scenes were just like...
The post-credit scenes are cracking up.
Cracking up,
Oh, my God.
And cameos and stuff, and
the cameos, the post-credit scenes, the bit where he forms X-Force.
That's it, X-Force.
Yeah, he forms X-Force. Oh,
that's in the trailer, so that's all right.
He's like, we're going to call ourselves X-Force. Isn't that a little derivative? Quiet.
Yeah, that's it.
So yeah, let's put it this way: if you've seen the trailer. I don't even feel like the trailer tells you what the film's about. The trailer just has fun, and the film just ups that ante even more.
I really like his best mate in the movie as well.
Wizard.
Wizard. I like him as a character, actually. Especially in one scene, yeah.
He was in the first film, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, played by T.J. Miller.
He's just like the bartender, wasn't he, in the bar?
Yep, he's the bartender in the bar where all the assassins go. This is the scene with him, and it's the only scene he shares with Cable.
Cable. That's really good.
The only scene he shares with Cable, but I thought it's, Deadpool 2, I would recommend that.
Yeah,
go see that. Especially if you're a comic book fan. Even if you've been watching comic book recently and you don't like them, this is a different kind of comic book movie. All right, cool. We're going to have some adverts, and we'll be back with some more films.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
White Sight is a ride-based spectacle boutique. And here's how it works. You need glasses? Take your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street Ride. White Sight is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses. Stockists of Gucci, Dior, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Bans and many more. You'll be spoilt for choice. White Sight's an independent retailer, so you can shop locally and be assured of first-class service and great glasses. Visit them in Cross Street Ride or check them out on www.whitesight.co.uk.
As a business, you have a legal responsibility to dispose of your waste in line with current government legislation. Island Environmental Hygiene Limited are an island company specialising in the collection of sanitary, clinical and hazardous waste, working closely with the Environment Agency to ensure your waste is disposed of legally. Our services are tailored to meet your needs. To find out more, visit islandhygiene.com or call 721 943.
Isle of Wight Food Bank provides emergency food and support to local people in crisis. Your support helps stop local people going hungry. For more information, ring the office on 01983 292 040 or check out isleofwightfoodbank.org.uk/.
Red Squirrel Property Shop are an independent, family-run local business that's honest, trustworthy and reliable. Isn't that exactly what you need when renting out your home? Honesty. At Red Squirrel Property Shop, we help rent out and manage properties all over the island. We can offer you various services from guaranteed rent on time, fully managed, and tenant introduction. We are there to help take away the stress from renting out your home. Call us today to have the life of a stress-free landlord on 01983 521 212.
Hi, it's the Rockmeister here. I went to see the management earlier today and said, look, I'm so popular now that I need another night for the rock show. Says the management, not sure about that. No, I am that popular. Okay, says the management, you can have Wednesday. Ah, oh, great. That's just what needed. Another night, Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday. No, says the management, you can have Wednesday, but not Tuesday. Oh, that didn't work out very well, did it? The Wednesday Rock Show, now 7 through till 10.
Broadcasting to you from the Riverside Centre in Newport. This is your Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Welcome back to Vectis Movies on Vectis Radio 104.6, as you just heard. Now, we are going to carry on to our second movie of the week, and this is Entebbe.
Entebbe, yes.
Entebbe, which, Sean, you have seen. So tell us a little bit about this film.
The background to it. Okay. Well, in the 70s, there was a hijacking of a plane of hostages, and they landed in Entebbe,
yep,
which is Uganda, and they were making their demands and things like that. But the Israeli government decided that they weren't going to give in to demand. So they, I mean, it was
an Israeli plane?
No, it was a French plane. It was an Air France plane.
Okay.
But there was a lot of, it was flying to Tel Aviv, so there were lots of Jewish people on board the plane.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Because the terrorists actually let the French people go, the French nationals go, but the pilot of the plane and its crew said, no, we're not going. We are responsible for these people. That's actually true. The French pilot and that, they did stay with the hostages. And it's basically, I mean, there were two films made. There was Victory at Entebbe and Raid on Entebbe. Raid on Entebbe was with Charles Bronson, and which were made in the 70s, which I watched both of those.
Did one of them star Lindsay Wagner?
Yeah. Possibly. I couldn't say if that's Lindsay Wagner.
As the air stewardess. I seem to remember what I saw a few after me.
That might have been Raid, but I know. Oh, who was the girl from The Exorcist? The Linda Blair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was in. I got to get which one's right. She was in Victory at Entebbe, which was more of a Jewish production. Whereas Raid on Entebbe was more of an American production.
That was Charles Bronson.
That was Charles Bronson one. Yeah,
I kind of already have an idea what that film's going to be just by hearing that.
Charles Bronson. So yeah, which concentrate a lot more on the action. You know, it's a lot more on the action because in this film, there's not so much of the action going on. Basically, it's an operation to release the hostages because they're not going to give in to the demands of the terrorists, so they're going to release...
are the demands? Was it a ransom or...
It was a release,
release
of prisoners. Yeah, okay. It was a release of prisoners, really.
And held by the Israeli government?
Yeah, held by the Israeli government. So it was a release of these prisoners. And there's a couple of Baader-Meinhof terrorists. Now, in the 70s, there was a West German organization called Baader-Meinhof, and there's two German terrorists, and a lot of the time is wondering how they got involved in this, because even in the trailers a bit, the German terrorist says, I'm not a Nazi, you know, because it's all going a bit intense.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it's a bit weird, like if you have like some Germans kidnapping I think they actually say that line, that
they
like,
do, yeah,
some Germans kidnapping a plane load of Jews, it does not look good.
No, it doesn't look good. So, but anyway, so that's basically the story about this operation. It's very, you know, there's a lot behind the scenes with the politics and saying, oh, you know, what happens if they all get killed? So very, very political. The film on a whole, I have to say, for a personal opinion, was not that. I was not impressed by that film. I was not really, really not impressed by that film.
Oh, yeah?
I think they were trying to be too... I mean, there wasn't much about the operation. That was very limited. And there's a narrative running through the story of one of the soldiers, or one of the colonel's wives, is a dancer. And they have this dance performance going on all the way at different bits through the movie. And when it comes to the final bit, I don't know why it was there, really. I don't know why to do it. It totally spoiled it. And they had in the action scenes, they had the token slow-mo shots, you know? I mean, that's been overdone. And, yeah, it's all right sometimes. But there's, like, the classics. And it cuts between this dance performance and the operation that's going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's this bit, and then there's that bit, and then there's that bit, and it's just...
that gets on your nerves.
A bit arty. Trying to be too clever, maybe. Trying to be too clever.
Yeah.
But it's mainly based on the politics of the thing, you know, with all the like the Israeli cabinet and saying, well, you know, what happens if something goes wrong? It's your responsibility. No, it's your responsibility.
Well, because I figured that a film like that that's made nowadays would not, it couldn't just be an action movie. It couldn't be like, you know, oh, these are the good guys and these are the bad guys and all. Because even when you look at what's happening at the moment in Jerusalem, I think this film is released at a very sort of topical point.
Yeah.
Is released a very, and I feel that that you would have to address that. You would have to go like, okay, what's going to go on here? What's just examine the politics and the human motivation of that. So, and you couldn't just go with all out action or anything like that. So, I expect that the film would be talky.
Yeah, it was talky compared to the Charles Bronson one, which was more about the actual operation,
yeah,
and not so much like, you know,
about the politics.
About the operation, not so much about the politics. Whereas this movie is very, very much about the politics.
I suppose it has a lot of explaining to do, because I suppose most people who would watch it now wouldn't have a memory of those events.
I had no clue.
You had no clue.
Because I'd heard of it, but not in. I couldn't recall much about it, but I was aware that it had happened. Because, you know, in this, obviously the films that have been around it, and obviously in the 70s, plane hostage takings weren't that unusual, were they?
No, it was a common thing, wasn't it?
It was a thing that happened in the 70s that,
yeah,
planes got hijacked, and on the news it'd be pictures of the plane on the runway and then
hostage takers
hanging out the pilot's window and all these other things you'd see.
Yeah, there were lots of terrorist groups, weren't there? And also you had the thing with Munich. Because I think there was a film made about that as well, wasn't
there?
Yeah,
Steven Spielberg.
That's what was reminding when you were talking about, you know, the sort of Israeli Mossad or whatever, because Munich was about the Israeli response to the Munich
Olympic bombings, games 1974.
The terrorists and where the people were killed.
Yeah, it was so.
But they sort of deconstructed it. So you looked at the events of that day, and then the consequences, and then the political consequences. So they sort of took that main one story, and then they expanded upon it. But that was Steven Spielberg, and obviously he is a bit more of a skilled filmmaker, possibly.
Yeah. So this movie really, really didn't cut the mustard, I was afraid. It was trying to be maybe too clever, and as I say, I was just... In the end, I was just like, "Oh, come on, let's finish this." And then it went really arty, as I say, in the editing between the
raid and the dance.
And I'm like, oh, "Come on, you know."
Sometimes when I see films like that, I think I might just go and get a book about Entebbe and find out what really happened.
Right. Okay. So now this is a film that remember when Pete came in at the beginning of the year and spoke about the preview of the year films that he was looking forward to. I remember he mentioned this film because I think originally it was going to be called 3 Days at Entebbe.
7 days, I think.
So 7 days. Okay, 7 days at Entebbe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So the film was originally going to be called, and he was talking about how he was looking forward to this film, and I said that I was worried because it might fall into one of my no-nos of cinema, which is the sort of like terrible depiction of Africans or like something that's taking place in Africa. Africans are just, they're beside the story. I know Idi Amin shows up in this film.
He does, yeah. I was going to come to him, but go on.
I know Idi Amin shows up in this film, but how are the Africans depicted in this film? Let me know whether I can put my boxing gloves on and go punch some.
Okay. Well, you never really see many of the soldiers. You just only ever see the colonel. Or general, I think, colonel.
Idi Amin.
Idi Amin. So you see Idi Amin, and he's just, they portray him as just, I would say a buffoon sort of thing, but you know, he's just like, oh, this is what happened, and the gracious people, and I will sort this out. And they sort of portray him as a bit of a megalomaniac, which I believe he probably was. And you know, like, oh, this is, you know, I'm going to sort it all out. I'm going to be the good guy in this. There was one bit where he actually says that, you know, the terrorists will kill these children if you don't, you know, comply and all that. And so, he's basically played as a megalomaniac. But there's a scene in it where he's actually sat with one of the terrorists and they're talking to the Israeli cabinet and they go, the cabinet says, oh, please can you tell the terrorist that sat opposite you that, you know, and he gets all a bit paranoid then. He's like, afterwards, how did they know? But basically he's not in it for huge amounts of time, and the time he is in it, he's just basically wants to be like you know godlike Jesus.
Center of attention, basically.
That was him.
So it's a story that's set in an African country, but it's not really about the Africans.
No, you don't really. You know, you see the odd sort of sentry and the odd soldier here and there, but that's really the only depiction you really get of an African.
I guess that's historically accurate, but I still don't like it.
But no, for sure.
How many stars out of five would you give it?
Probably about one star, I think.
Oof.
Ooh, okay. Ooh. Yeah. Gosh.
Ow. Eesh. Yeah. Ooh, that hurts. I feel that.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it would
be interesting to see some reviews of it, actually, to see what people think.
The reviews I've heard about it have been similarly sort of scathing. Kind of like the reviews I've heard about it have been along the lines of, kind of see what they're trying to do, but no,
yeah,
it's a good thing, but okay. So we have Daniel Brühl, Rosamund Pike, and other people in this film, Eddie Marson, second film this week with Eddie Marson in it, because I think Eddie Marson he has this thing. So he's a great British actor.
Yeah, he turns up in all sorts of things.
He shows up in all sorts of random stuff. Eddie Marson is a great British actor, but I have a feeling like they have this sort of like, you know, casting book in Hollywood, and they're going, yeah, we need a guy who's going to be a little bit creepy.
We need a guy who's going to
be a little bit creepy. We need him to be a bad guy. He's not going to have that many lines, and he needs to show up, and the second you look at him, you go, oh my God, he's creepy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, let's get Eddie Marson.
Let's get him in there.
I think in this film he plays a sort of
because he's one of the Jewish
he's the what do they call it, the military what do they call them, he's in charge of the military. They call him, you know, so he's like the political end of the military.
Oh, chief of staff
type of thing. Yeah. So I've got minister for, you know, Israeli Defence Force. That's what they call him. Defence Force. So he's the minister for the Defence Force.
Yeah.
For the army.
Does he have more than a couple of lines?
Yeah, he's got quite a few lines, really.
Okay, and
he's basically saying to the Prime Minister, he's the one that's saying, look, we can't give in, we can't do this, you know. And he goes, you know, you're going to take responsibility. And he says, well, that's what comes with being president, you know. Mm. But he's very forthright in this. In fact, he acts it really well. He's probably one of the shining lights.
Oh, yeah?
Same with Rosamund Pike, really, I guess, because, you know, she's playing a different role to what she normally plays.
I don't think that there's any such thing as a Rosamund Pike role. The woman keeps changing.
She does a bit of everything, doesn't she?
Yeah, she keeps changing. I mean, you compare Gone Girl to Hostiles earlier this year. I'm just kind of like, man, she's just a great actress.
So that's quite good. But as I say, I think what really did it was The editing
killed it for you.
It did, because all the way through the film, this dance, and it's like, what's this to do?
What's that point? What is the significance? And you know what? I do not care at all.
Because I couldn't even work out. Obviously, there was some correlation between the operation and the dance, but I couldn't figure out what the symbolism was.
Yeah.
Symbolic of the inner torment of the dancer.
No. I just think that whoever's married to that dancer does not end this film alive. That's what I think. But don't tell us anything, Sean.
No, I won't.
All right, cool. So we're gonna go for another ad break, and then we're gonna be back to finish up the show. And we have Brian Curtis, who's just walked in, who's going to be coming in with what are you calling it now? The Electric Eclectic. Yeah, the Electric Eclectic coming up at 7 o'clock. All right. We'll see you after these messages.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, Isle of Wight's community station.
The Wight Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983-300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Would you like to see how a community radio station works? Would you like to be a volunteer and be part of a team of dedicated people? There are opportunities for presenting, co-presenting, producing, cleaning, and selling advertising, all of which are equally important for the smooth running of the station. Come and see how it all works at our next coffee morning on Saturday the 2nd of June from 10 a.m. to midday. See you there.
This is Vectis Radio, the Isle of Wight's local community station.
In 2013, Vectis Radio set up the 4 P's Radio School, designed to train young people aged 11 to 19 in 4 crucial areas of radio: presenting, production, promotion, and podcasting. Hence the 4 P's. The course is also available to people with additional needs, up to the age of 25, helping young people gain confidence and skills that will help them as they move forward in life. To find out more, visit www.4ps.org.uk. This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Can you guess who we are? We are a local to the island. We are fast, friendly, and efficient. We're extremely eye-catching, if I do say so myself. We have brought lots of joy to people's lives, therefore we have many fans on the island. And you will see our signs scattered island-wide. Yes, you're right. We're Red Squirrel Property Shop, the property experts in selling and letting homes, supplying the ultimate service for our customers. Call us today on 01983 521 212 for a local and friendly service tailored to you.
Devoted to the Isle of Wight, this is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
Welcome back to Vectis Movies. Now we're on to the final 10 minutes. No, actually, no, it's more like 20 minutes of the show.
20 minutes, so two films to get through.
Yeah, we've got two films to get through. And so now we go on to Sharon. You have waited. You have been patient. And now your moment in the sun is here. And you have, you went and saw, the way you described it, it was your annual animation.
Yes. I managed to, I can be persuaded to see one a year.
Yeah. Now, I'm quite heartbroken that you didn't, the one you saw this year was not Coco. I'm really, really heartbroken because Coco would have been worth it.
But I thought it was going to be Isle of Dogs, actually, because I was thinking Isle of Dogs have sort of appealed because I do like Wes Anderson.
Yep.
But my friend, I normally go to the cinema with a friend most weeks, and she sent me a text saying, do you fancy going to see this? And I thought,
hi, Gemma.
Yeah, Gemma. Shout out. I said, yes, I'll go and see Sherlock Gnomes.
Sherlock Gnomes. So this is is it a sort of sequel to Romeo and Juliet? Or is it a definite sequel to Romeo and Juliet?
No, it's another story in the world of the gnomes.
Okay, cool.
Because you start off with this funny little scene at the beginning where the gnomes are going through different storybooks saying, let's tell this story. Let's tell the story of... Oh, they're all puns. I can't remember. It's awful. I can't remember any of them. But they're saying, what about the story of this? And what about the story of that? But they're going through all the fairy tales and all the different rhymes and different stories that all have a sort of a gnome pun to them. And they go, no, let's tell the story of Sherlock Gnomes. And so basically, it's you with this storybook, you get the feeling that there could be many other sort of gnome
They're telling you this is what's to
There's
come.
A gnome universe out there. And basically, if you were as a child, and I as a child firmly believed that when I went to sleep, my toys got up and played.
Yep.
And that when I wasn't looking, that they had a life of their own. And I remember absolutely believing that when I was a small child. And this is a sort of film that appeals to that child.
Okay.
Who firmly believes that when you're not looking, these things come to life and have a life of their own. And so the premise is that those gnomes and those ornaments, and in this there's gargoyles as well.
Oh, wow.
Those things that you look at and you think are inanimate,
yeah,
they're only inanimate when humans are watching them. When you're not looking at them, they then have a life and a world of their own. And so this, the gnome family, as we met them in the last film, have moved to London. They used to live in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Okay, yeah, I get you.
With Romeo and Juliet.
I get you.
And now the red and the blues have joined forces, and then they've moved with all the other familiar characters. So if you've seen the first film, you're familiar with, like, Ozzy Osbourne plays a fawn, and you've got this... Stephen Merchant plays, like, this, you know, quite a clever, sort of the intelligent gnome. And Matt Lucas is this sort of sweet, lovable... slightly dippy one.
Yep, yep.
So you've got this whole cast of characters that have all moved to London. And in there's a pre-credit sequence where you see a previous adventure with Sherlock Gnomes, where his arch nemesis, the Moriarty in his world, is actually this giant squeaky pie thing. this mascot who looks a bit like the Stay Puffed Man from the
Ghostbusters movies,
but he's like, he's obviously a big pie baby, and he's like this evil genius who hates all gnomes, and he decides, you know, that he is going to destroy gnomes, and he starts kidnapping gnomes from around the place, and then he leaves his calling card, which is a card with an M on it, with a clue that takes you to the next calling card with another clue on it, and then you follow the train of these clues to find where the gnomes are being housed.
Yep.
And then with his diabolical scheme, he normally has them in this the most perilous situation where he, the Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty have this confrontation.
So
the gnomes are saved.
Okay, so you have the gnomes from the first film, which I never saw. I know it was made by Elton John's company, and it was it was supposed to be pretty much Romeo and Juliet, but with gnomes.
With gnomes, it is, yeah. And you know it's Elton John because every single soundtrack in it is an Elton song.
They were like, it was just cheaper. We had the rights.
We just do our own songs.
He must have liked gnomes when he was a...
Yeah.
I bet he's got a massive garden, probably with hundreds of gnomes.
Just hundreds of gnomes just all over the place.
Probably is now.
He's like, oh, these are all the ones that we couldn't put in the movie. I'll take them home.
So it's a great big gnome adventure with Sherlock Gnomes, who's voiced by Johnny Depp, and Watson, who's voiced by Chiwetel Ejiofor, who is the Watson character. And then you've got the usual Romeo and Juliet. James McAvoy is Romeo, and Juliet is Emily Blunt.
Oh yeah.
So you've got the same voices play the second
characters.
I thought
Statham. Oh no, Statham played Tybalt, didn't he? In the first one. Yeah.
And I know there's a character called Mankini because he wears on a mankini.
Yeah, and he's, you see him sunbathing, and he has like these sort of cheeky red buttons.
Okay, cool. So Jared, so far it sounds like, in spite of yourself, it sounds like you actually enjoyed this film.
I did enjoy it, yeah, because a lot of films, you see, I rationed myself to not many a year.
Yeah.
But the animation I saw last year was Finding Dory, which I really enjoyed because it's on many levels. You've got the story, then you've got, it talks about understanding and about acceptance of disabilities. And then you've got the odd joke that, you know, the grown-ups will understand. Yep. What I quite liked about Romeo is the fact that it's just a straightforward, fun story. There's no great morals other than, you know, be nice to your friends and be kind to people. And there's no sort of adult jokes that are just slipped in there to keep the adults entertained that the children don't understand.
Yeah,
it's quite innocent. It's English. And it's quite sweet, really. And even though there's peril, you never really think, oh no, they're all going to get smashed to bits. You don't. There's a little bit of potential, but not enough that would, you know, alarm little ones. So I thought it was just a sweet, fun little film, really.
Actually, the old Stay Puffed Man sounds interesting.
The evil pie monster. Yeah. There's some interesting characters that go to this toy museum. It's not really a spoiler. And some of the dolls are like really, really sinister, and you're like going, whoa. And these are the toys and dolls that, you know, we have around us.
Yeah.
And you look at them, and it's just the way the sort of the cast of the eye or the way the mouths are sewn on, that some of them look terrifying.
It sounds almost a bit Toy Story-ish.
I was thinking that. I was just going to say that's like...
It's an adventure. Yes, an adventure with, instead of the toys, it's an adventure with gnomes.
And that is a good thing about toys coming to life, I think. Toy Story, I love that.
Yeah.
My favourite, and that obviously with the soldiers. Okay, so we'll never
leave. He said, come on, soldier! Oh, go without me!
And the way this, you sort of, they you hear the sort of clickety clack of the ceramics on surfaces, and when they're running, cool. You hear them making this noise and stuff.
Because I know Romeo and Juliet was a film that I have to admit I was massively snobbish about before. I mean, when I heard the idea, I thought, this is a stupid idea. That's a stupid pun. Why are you, oh, for goodness sake, what do you think you're trying to... But from what I understood, it ended up being quite a charming film.
Yes.
It's quite a charming film. It was pretty much like the British answer to Toy Story.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that they've done well with this, and they've actually might... Because the Sherlock Gnomes thing seemed like it was just so... It feels like it could be so hackneyed and so hammy and so kind of like, let's get this thing in there with a crowbar, even though it doesn't fit.
Yeah. They did it quite well. And there's a few nods to, if you know your Sherlock history, there's a few nods to to your Sherlock history, but not enough that you go, oh, that's clever. You just sort of go, oh, yeah, that you recognise it as a nod to it. But you don't, it's not one of those things where it's like, oh, the children won't understand, but we do. And they think it doesn't sort of talk down to the children. It's just saying, this is a great fun adventure with the gnomes in your garden that who knows when you're not looking.
Who knows what they get up to?
They have a life of their own.
Yeah,
don't trust. So I enjoyed it. It was definitely aimed at families. I was aimed at little ones. It's a U, and it's also quite harmless. My friend was a bit concerned because one of the exclamations was, oh, fertilizer. And he was like, well, I don't want them to encourage children to be using different exclamations of distress. But I thought that part...
How does he feel about fiddlesticks?
I think any exclamation of distress is a cause for concern where the little ones are concerned. But no, I would say, yes, it's light-hearted, harmless entertainment. I mean, it's not a long film. I think it was 88 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you could sit there, enjoy it, and have fun.
And then just let it go.
Let it go.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
But knowing that, yeah, that it'd be fun for the little ones to watch.
All right, cool. So you went... I think we're slowly turning you around to this animation thing.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't go to... I couldn't get a whole one, but... I normally sort of ration them, so, you know, this is my one for this year, probably.
Why is it you don't like animation?
I don't know. I just find them... In my head, there's a barrier, I think, right. Because it's animation or it's... To me, there's a separation between sort of any emotional involvement or any identifying with the characters and stuff. But when I actually watch them, I actually quite enjoyed them. But in my head, I'm thinking, oh, I just don't want to suffer through this.
Why must I? What have I done?
Don't let me do it.
Why have I angered you, Lord?
I remember that I was like literally forced to go and see Shrek. And I was just like, I just don't want to go. And they're like, you have to go. Our friendship depends upon it. And it was just like, oh, right. And then I actually quite liked it. I couldn't have watched these things twice, of course. I'd be like, I can't say it again. I've watched it once. That's it.
Okay, so...
It was fun.
So which film have you seen... that was an animation that you didn't like?
An animation that I didn't like?
Yes.
I'm trying to think. I tend to... I really did not like Puss in Boots.
Okay, cool. That's understandable.
I thought that was just... I just thought it was never going to end.
So I can't even remember that. Is that one with Humpty
Antonio
Dumpty?
Antonio Banderas.
Is that the one with Humpty Dumpty in?
Yeah, Humpty Dumpty's... Oh, yeah. Yeah, Humpty Dumpty's in it with Antonio Banderas says, prepare to pay for mercy for Puss.
I just remember within about a quarter of an hour, I was just like, I've had enough now.
Well, that definitely... Puss in Boots definitely goes... It definitely skews a lot younger. All right, cool. So how many stars would you give... I was about to say Entebbe there. Stars did you give Sherlock Gnomes?
I'd give it a 4.
4? Ooh, cool. 4 from the self-professed animation hater.
Yes.
You need to see Coco. You need to see Coco.
Don't make me go.
No, seriously, you've got to see Coco. No, it's not in the cinemas anymore. You can watch it at home. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll paint over everything and make them look like, if it helps you, Coco in some of the animation actually looks remarkably lifelike.
Okay.
The grandmother's face in that is a thing of, it's a marvel to behold. The grandmother's face in Coco is amazing. But all right, cool. And now we're going to a final film, and we are going to talk about, Sean, what is it?
It's Breaking In.
I'm asking because I totally forgot. But which funny enough is, this is a film that when I heard the synopsis of it and I saw like the, so like, this keeps happening. People go, this is this film, Breaking In. Look at the poster. What's okay. Hear the synopsis. Okay, see this trailer. You're like, okay, walk away and immediately forget about it. But what do you think? You actually went to go see the film. Tell us about the film a little bit.
Okay, so the story of this film is this this family, and the elder daughter's obviously been a few problems, so they decide they're going to send her away to this boarding school. So
wait a second. This sounds exactly like The Strangers last week.
It does.
That's
it
exactly
not?
The same does way you started your review of that film last week.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, oh, yeah, that was, yeah, no, see, that's how confusing, that's how, you're exactly right. No, this is, that's right, there's this family.
Yeah.
And it's the same, yeah, so it must be the same premise, basically. Yeah, they got to drive to this boarding school.
Yeah.
But on the way, they're going to stop at this, Trailer Park.
No, that's the Strangers. That's the Strangers.
That's what I did last week.
Breaking In.
Oh, yeah, Breaking In.
Is the one
breaking
about the house?
Yeah. Oh, it's the house, yeah. Okay, basically, starts off, there's this family, and their grandfather's died.
Oh, yeah.
They've got to go to the house. I do apologise.
No, not at all.
So you can guess what I'm going to think about this film.
Not at all, man. I had a feeling that the word generic might show up a couple
generic,
of times.
Yeah, exactly right. You've nailed it. Anyway, so they have to go to their grandfather's house to clear it all up because they're going to sell it.
Yeah.
And basically, obviously, the grandfather's been in some sort of, he's obviously rich. He's obviously got lots of money. And there's some money in this house. And it just happens that at the same time, this group of like burglars, criminals, breaks in because they want to find the house.
Oh, that's so annoying when that happens.
It's just like perfect timing, and they want to find this safe. So obviously, well, there you go. That's a story, really. And they sort of get the children. The mother's out at the time, and you know they're saying, they're looking for this safe with loads and loads of money, and they're searching it, and they can't find it.
Yep.
And obviously, they've got the children. They're saying, "Oh, you know, if we'll give you your children, but you've got to tell us where the safe is. You know, come on in, just come on in." But she obviously decides that she doesn't want it. She wants to protect her children, but she knows that if she gives herself up, they're all going to die. You know,
so yep.
Basically, she's not going to give herself up, which I quite liked. I thought, "Oh yeah, okay, this is different because normally they say, oh yeah, you know, my children, I'll come
yeah,
on
my
in.
Children, I'll do everything yeah. for my children. Take me, oh well, dead."
And so basically, becomes into this, revenge because she obviously knows the house because she was brought up there, she lived there.
Yep.
She knows all the little tweaks and twerks, you know, can turn off
nooks
the lights
and crannies and all that kind of stuff.
And where to go. And obviously she, so basically the whole story, that's the story. Basically, she's trying to get her children back. Now, I quite like the idea of not giving yourself up. I think that's a really, really good thing not to do, because what's the point? Because you're all going to go.
Yep.
But then and it just...
Oh, no. Is there every, an and then
okay,
coming?
Let's just say it's got every cliche you could possibly think of. You know, there's like the
Uh-oh.
People getting captured, nearly getting captured, nearly getting... And there's... Oh, it's just awful. Right?
Did someone get knocked out, then they pop back up again?
Yeah. Just that, you know, don't finish them off. But no, the bit I can't understand, and there's this bit in the movie, and I don't mind if it's a spoiler or what, because it's in so many movies. You're on a path, you know... You're on a path, so straight path.
Yep.
Like the path up the thing. You've got woods and hills on one side, woods and hills on the other
God.
Side.
This
and you've got a car.
This was last week as well.
Yeah. And it's the same thing, you know? And it's just like exactly
the same
thing.
Did they not see
the
last week's film? Honestly.
I think.
Obviously, they don't listen to this show.
No. They do not. And I'm not kidding. You
or
could not you could not do one from
ever.
The other. You could not. This was just like The Strangers, but without the masks, you know? And without
yeah.
the. So. Yeah, it was pretty, to be honest with you.
It sounds like you really enjoyed
it. It's just a thing. To start with, I thought, oh, where's this, you know, what's this going
to
go?
They might have something to offer, but sounds obviously not.
I mean, you know, there's like a hose pipe in it, which I don't know.
Anyway,
there's just like all this silly stuff, you know, and people get, just all really, really convenient stuff. You know, there's like loft spaces and places where you can and the timing's all really, really good, you know.
Is it one of those things that someone's coming, they're coming around, quick yeah. hide, they're coming around the corner,
so sort of locked in a room and oh look, there's a loft space, I wonder we can get through the loft space, do whatever you got to do and then get back and pretend that nothing ever happened, you know. But it's all like
Breakfast Club,
it's all like perfect timing, you know, like they never get caught doing things. So, and it all ends up good in the end, you know. And then,
well, you mean the bad guys win for a change?
No. Yes.
You mean the kids die?
Well, I don't, and the kids don't die. But the thing is, what I can't understand is if something like that was all going wrong, and you're a criminal, you're going to get. You know, it just seemed to me there was an alarm,
mm-hmm.
and they said, "Oh, we got this amount of time before the police turn up." And it seems like just, you think the police would be there now.
Yeah.
All right, okay, cool. So how many stars?
Probably about the same as in Tabby, one.
Oh, good. Oh, you
so,
have...
So I've had a bad week this
week.
You've had a bad week.
Though,
I think it's kind of like evens up by Deadpool too.
Yeah, Deadpool takes
okay,
it.
Okay, so, okay, we don't have that much time, but because the thing about this is, it sounds like it sounds refreshing to have it be, it sounds essentially like Die Hard, trying to get into a house, but with a woman.
A woman, yeah.
Yeah, have a woman. And I think also a black woman.
A black woman, yeah.
Yeah, a black woman. So it sounds like it's at least a little bit refreshing in that.
I think it was directed by a woman as well, wasn't it? Was it
that I do not know.
No, I don't know. But no. I've got a feeling. But yeah, I mean, really, when you think of...
with Gabriel Union, who I love, but it just doesn't get many good things.
No, so it's like that. There is a scene where her husband turns up and, you know, gets beaten up and that, and I thought, well, you know, her husband would be a bit more, you know, so she sort of takes over. She sort of takes over from the husband's role. Instead of the husband going, you know, what's going on, he gets taken out pretty easy and gets beaten up and all that, and they're like, oh, no, stop.
Well, look at that. That's pretty, certainly it has some good intentions, but it doesn't quite do that.
Yeah, no, it could have been good.
All right, we are out of time, and so we'll just see you guys next week, hopefully we should be talking about Solo, a Star Wars story.
Solo, yeah.
See you guys then.
Bye.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Vectis Radio, 104.6. The heart.